to the Smart Women Published podcast for today. I'm your host, Bev Ryan. I really love helping smart women write and publish nonfiction books that have impact in the broader world, but also in their own world. I'm the author of the book Smart Women Published, which has really kind of led to this podcast. Today, I'm talking with Carolyn Tate, who is a writer, educator, and publisher and is based in Australia. So welcome, Carolyn.
Thanks, Bev, for the invitation.
Oh, it's great to talk to you in this context. So I'll open with the first question. Just tell us about a book that has impacted you in your career.
Well, it's not really a business book. It's influenced me creatively, which has also influenced me, obviously, in my work. And it's a book called The Artist's Way. It's a very, very successful, sold millions. It's a 12-week course put into a book where you actually get to tap into your creativity, your spirituality, and all of those things that matter to you. And it was instrumental in helping me write my third book. So I'd have to say The Artist's Way was one of those seminal books that really made a big impact on my career and my work.
Yeah, that book has been around a long time and it pops up in a lot of places, doesn't it? She's very well known for that influence, just to help people step out of their head, I suppose, and move into that creative zone.
Well, I worked with it over the 12 weeks. I was actually in France at the time in 2010, and so it helped me write a 68,000 word manuscript. So I don't believe I could have done it without having The Artist's Way as my companion.
Mm-hmm. So what book was that?
So that was Unstuck in Provence. So it was a travel memoir. Funnily enough, people say, oh, it was my time in France. I went to Aix-en-Provence for 6 months, and many people ask me if that was my Eat, Pray, Love experience, which is another seminal book that I absolutely loved. And I tell people that, no, you cannot have a 6 month sabbatical in tow because I had my 12-year-old son in tow. And so it wasn't an Eat, Pray, Love experience at all with a 12-year-old.
Oh, I could imagine. But I was just looking at your books before I did this call, and your subtitle for that book is The Courage to Start Over. So I imagine that would speak to a lot of people.
Yeah, well, it was. I mean, what preceded the time in France was I'd sold my house, I'd given away all my possessions, I'd closed my business at the time, so I'd been in marketing for a long time, and I literally gave everything up to start over. And it was because I'd become, well, part of the reason was because at the time I'd become really quite disenfranchised with marketing as a profession and where it was heading, but also I just wasn't really experiencing much joy from that. So I started over in my life and career, and after my time in France, I moved to Melbourne. I didn't return to Sydney where I was living before. So it definitely was a cathartic starting over process.
Definitely. Look, we first met when you published your first book, Small Business, Big Brand. So because listeners are either contemplating the publishing journey or they're already well immersed in it, could you just talk through each of your books and maybe just how each of them, you know, what was the purpose of each of them in your career and what influence they had on how you've developed?
Yeah, so the first book I wrote was Small Business, Big Brand. That was in 2007. And I'd been in my marketing business for a few years, and I'd been writing a lot of blogs. And you know, in the early 2000s, blogging and websites weren't even that popular. You know, you were pretty innovative if you even had a website in 2000 or the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So I was writing blogs to market my business, and then I thought, I'm going to have a go at writing a book. So I took myself off for 4 days and four nights and sat at this rickety old kitchen table in this little rustic cottage overlooking a lake. And I wrote for 4 days, and there were 30,000 words on my laptop when I emerged. And it was my beginning to my beginning of me understanding that my purpose on this earth was actually to write. And so, yeah, it was a cathartic, pivotal experience for me. And then when I got back, when I published that book, the Dummies franchise saw that I'd written that book and they really liked the tone and style of it, and invited me then to write Marketing Your Small Business for Dummies. So I wrote that and then went to France, as I'd already told you, and I knew I didn't want to write a business book. It was kind of, I was having this exquisite creative cultural experience and it just wouldn't have been right to write a business book. So I wrote a personal book instead and then came back from that and I thought I'd give marketing one last attempt at doing good in the world. So I wrote Conscious Marketing. Still kind of, I guess, because I was a bit stuck still with what was I going to do with my career, and marketing still seemed like it would be where I could center my work and make some money and those things. And then as soon as I wrote Conscious Marketing, I kind of shifted into the Purpose Project, because the core of Conscious Marketing was really about teaching people that if you have a solid purpose, then all your marketing communication hangs off purpose. So then the Purpose Project came up. So one book has in a way led to another, and I've got about 10 more books in me, and I'm just at the moment writing a novel. So I'm giving it trying to step more into the creative writing space, which is proving really challenging.
Right. I noticed in a newsletter I think you sent out last week that you mentioned that you're doing both the novel and your other work with Purpose Project. I found that really interesting. You kind of figured out, you've written, I think I finally cracked the code. My first hour of the day is devoted to novel writing, and I'm happy to say my word count is growing by the day. The rest of the day is devoted to making this course the best it can be. That insight, I think, is really valuable to many, many people. I don't have a train going past in the background, but that's okay. I think that's one of the big things people struggle with, isn't it? Is how do they fit the writing in? So has it taken you a long time to figure this out?
I think, so if I reflect on my writing history, my book writing history, I've approached them all in a different way. So I wrote the Dummies book over 6 weeks and seven days and literally writing for 12 hours a day. And, so I approached that book writing in a different way. Conscious Marketing book, I did, chunks of weekends, and then a week I'd block out of my diary and do. I did that over a year, 18 months. And then the Purpose Project again was in chunks of time. And of course, Unstuck in Provence was over 5 months in a big chunk of time as well. And I do tend to write better when I do get chunks of time, but right at the moment I know that I can't take chunks of time because I'm also working on the Purpose Project online course. Mm-hmm. And so it seems that I've got to modify my methodologies around writing according to where I am at the moment. So, I'll try and write an hour every day, put it in my diary, I make it a practice, and then when I get to Christmas, I'll probably have a month off and I'll just like write like a demon for a month, 8 hours a day minimum or something. So my writing process and system isn't very consistent, but I do know that when I don't give myself time to write, I feel like I'm losing, like I'm kind of a bit depleted. I'm not really living my purpose every day.
Mm. Well, I guess that leads to the next question, which I'm interested to hear your answer to. In your mind, what's the difference between a writer and an author?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the things that I write that I love, so I journal every morning, 3 pages. That was a legacy of the artist Sway, actually, and I have done that since 2010, and there's probably on average only one day a week where I wouldn't journal. Mm-hmm. And that is even being a writer, you know, and I use writing as a way for, it's almost like therapy for me, you know, I write out my answers to my questions. I will write about an idea that I have and it comes to flow through the pages. So that's one way of writing. And then I also write blogs a lot still and newsletters and obviously a book. And, you know, I think a writer, an author is really somebody who publishes a book.
Mm.
And a writer is somebody who writes in whatever capacity that is, whether it's journaling, blogging, writing books, whether it's writing articles for magazines, whatever it is. I feel like the difference between a writer and an author is, and an author, someone could write one book and publish it and they're an author, mm-hmm. but they're actually not a writer.
Yes.
Because they've just produced a book because they see there's an opportunity as a way to market their business, or they write a book because, you know, they've been told, like my mother's written a book, Red Dirt Diaries, with my sister, and she'll never write a book again, but she is an author.
Mm.
I wouldn't call her a writer now. Yeah. My other sister is a writer. It must be in the blood. And my son's a writer because he's writing articles and story and assignments for his university degree. So a writer is somebody who practices the craft of writing on a very regular basis. And an author is someone who has written intensively for a period of time and published a book, but who may not ever write again.
Mm.
Does that make sense or not?
It makes perfect sense. Because in the work that I do, and I guess this podcast and my book are really aimed at helping people who want to publish a nonfiction book as part of their career or their business. So they definitely are authors. I think going back to what you said earlier, where you feel depleted if you don't do it, that's kind of like writing is part of your DNA.
Yeah, it is. And I love to use the quote by Gloria Steinem, who's a bit of an icon for me. Feminist and author and activist, and she said that writing is the only thing that when I do it, I don't feel I should be doing something else.
Mm.
And that's how I feel when I write. There's nothing else I'd rather do. It's kind of like my anchor. It's my glue. When I'm doing it, I'm 100% in flow. I feel happy. It's the thing that I go to even in the bad times, you know, if tragedy strikes or you know, I'm having a difficult time in life, whatever it is, writing is that thing that I will turn to, whether that's journaling, blogging, writing a book, it doesn't matter. I will always find time to write. It's mm-hmm. it's the thing that I revert to constantly.
Yeah. So have you got to a point in your business, your career, that writing is pretty much the fundamental of all else?
Yeah, look, I even writing this online course, you know, it started as a writing exercise. I had to write stories. I had to write worksheets. I had to write a script for my videos that I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So at the core of everything I do, writing is really what underpins it. So, yeah, I've got to a point where writing is kind of the foundation of everything that I do.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested to have a conversation about how you've taken your book, The Purpose Project, and, you know, what you've built from that, and that will include your course.
Yeah. Well, it's been the foundation for me to get speaking. Like, I've been invited to speak at events. I do a lot of speaking in my work. It's been the foundation for consulting work that I've been doing with a bank and with Lululemon and with a couple of not-for-profits coming up, and I'm doing work with the Ethics Centre at the moment as well. So the book has actually been like this lead generator, for want of better words, for other types of projects, and each book has led to another book as well, you know. So it has built my business. Writing has built my business. But more interestingly, now as I've stepped into the the online learning space. It's mm-hmm. been really interesting. So the Purpose Project has now just been launched as an online course. And what I found was that I was getting feedback from people on the book that they loved it. They loved the concept. They love what I stand for. They love the stories. They loved so much, but what was missing from the book was a how-to process. So anyone who reads it is looking for their purpose and wants to be able to articulate it and create a purpose project from it. What I found was that people didn't, there was no process or how-to. So what I did was I picked the best lessons and the best stuff from the book and I put it into a 7-step process and 7 lessons so that somebody from can go from having no idea what their purpose is to actually developing a purpose project and pitching it to their boss.
Mm-hmm.
So the book has been the foundation of identifying a process, which I realised people felt was missing from the book.
So the book inspired them, then the next step is, well, how do I do that? I think that's a perfect model for a lot of people with their books. The book doesn't have to tell everything you know. You don't have to put every idea and every thought and every bit of IP into a book. You can present a concept. And in your case, you're presenting a very new concept because you're talking about people finding purpose within their employment, aren't you?
Yeah, it is. It is really unique. It's the new frontier of purpose in the workplace that I think a lot of companies haven't yet embraced. So I'm pretty, it's uncharted territory, I think, to a big degree. Because what I'm asking people to do is to find that thing that they love and that's probably latent in them. I use the Ikigai model, which is Japanese, which means reason for being. And it's 4 circles of what you're good, what you love, what the world needs and what you can be paid for. Now, most people are in jobs that they're doing what they're good at and what they can be paid for, that they've probably neglected the what you love and what the world needs circles in their work.
Mm-hmm.
And so my view is that we can bring those 2 circles to our work. So there's a lot of frustrated artists and environmentalists and designers and chefs and, you know, there's a whole lot of amazing people out there with talents that they may just kind of develop as a hobby or they might just do in their spare time, which is fine, but would really feel like they'd love to be doing more of it. And for some reason, they've not seen an application for that at work. But in my experience, there's pretty much no purpose that people don't truly have that can't actually be applied to work, and that if we can help people bring that thing to work, we can start to heal cultures. So if you're passionate about yoga and that's your thing, why aren't you teaching your coworkers yoga at lunchtime each week? You know, so I feel like it's not an either or, it's an and. Yes, I've got the day job to do, but if I can bring my purpose to work, I can make my day job much more enjoyable.
Yes, and then companies won't be losing very good staff because the staff are feeling unfulfilled.
Yeah, well, that is the thing. You know, I think that a lot of companies lose good staff because they will go off and start their own business, or they will go and look for a company that's more purpose-driven, that's more aligned with their purpose. So they are losing good people, and also they're not keeping people engaged. You know, they're kind of leaving work depleted rather than fulfilled and completed. You know, I say the opposite of depletion is completion, and feeling completed at work can actually be just this little X factor of bringing that wider work.
Definitely, and we all know that the world of self-employment, there's a lot of fulfillment, but there's a lot of heartache and headache as well. It's not always all rosy.
Yeah, well, I kind of, the thing that I say is that we should always start where we are. You know, I probably, if I'd known that I really was, writing was my thing when I was in banking all those years ago, I could have been a banker and a writer. I didn't need to go to France or start my own business or do any of those things. But if I'd had the right mentorship in my career, or if I'd had the right consciousness myself and my own personal awareness or whatever, I could have done both. But I think what happens in the corporate world is that we just get so stuck in our job, and that is, that becomes who we are. And then outside of work, if we have a passion, it's pursued in our spare time and very fleetingly at that. So so I feel like it's the new frontier of purpose, and I'm really, really excited about this work. And I'm starting to see leaders really adopt it, and I will start to think about it at least. So I'm hoping to lead the movement.
Awesome. So I'm just really interested in one more question around that. Can you tell us like a success story that you've witnessed? And it might be something that you feel, oh, well, it's just quite a small thing, but any small thing is actually a really big thing for people.
Yeah, well, I can give you a big example and a little one. So like in Lululemon, I've been doing work with them, and they are at the frontier of purpose. So as a company, their purpose is to elevate the world by unleashing the full potential within every one of us, which is a big purpose. But so they, what they believe is that if every person in their company can achieve their full potential centered on their own personal purpose, then it's going to collectively make a difference to the company. So they empower people to bring their own purpose to work. They will have people in their company that own their own business as well as work at Lululemon. They will encourage people to support their cause or charity as part of their work and create a purpose project around it. So that's a big company that fully embraces company purpose and then helps individuals bring their purpose to work. And then at a smaller level, you know, I was teaching a class recently, and there was a girl called Cynthia in the group, in the room, and this reflects back at the yoga course. And she worked in an inbound call center, and she'd just become a yoga teacher, and she was thinking about starting her own business. But through the course of conversation, she realized that her greatest opportunity was to start right where she was and bring yoga to her workplace. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine a workplace, an inbound call center in the world that could not benefit with a bit of yoga and yoga philosophy. So that's just a very small example of how someone might see that it, and it would be up to Cynthia to pitch that to her boss.
Yes.
You know, get some support from her co-workers and start to create a movement and ask people who wants this and just take self-responsibility for it. Because I think the other big thing is that people feel like, well, my leader won't support that, or, you know, that I need to get permission. I actually say purpose by stealth is the absolute best way to go and get started and not really ask for permission. Just do it and see what happens.
Take the initiative, definitely. Yeah. Going back to publishing books, so many listeners that are tuning into this podcast will be, as I said, either thinking about publishing or be partway through writing. I'd be really interested in your thoughts on how important it is for writers, authors, so authors as in women in business or professions, how important it is it for them to have their purpose in mind when they write?
Oh, like there's no point in writing unless you know why you're doing it. And I think it's about knowing your personal why, but also know why you're writing a book. So the why question can't be asked enough. Why am I doing this? Why is it important? Why is it important? Keep drilling down, keep asking, why is that important, till you get to the nut of why you do what you do. Mm-hmm. It's always emotional. I think very often in business we can get stuck in our head and we make choices for rational reasons, not for emotional reasons. Very often, and we might write a book because someone else has told us to, or we think we have a good story to tell, and so we set ourselves this impossible goal that I'm going to write this book, and then we haven't really understood why we're writing it. And when you know why, then it's much more possible to be achieved. I use the why, what, and how kind of three, the holy trinity of why, what, and how. Mm-hmm. Know why you want to do it, know what it is you want to achieve, but let the how unfold a little more loosely, because I think we can get too attached to the how without knowing why or what.
Yes, someone would ask, for example, someone might ask me, how do I write a book? Well, just backtrack a little bit. Well, why do you want to write this book? What's your purpose for the book? And also in amongst those why questions is, if you're writing a book, your why will someone want to read this?
Yes.
And you have to embed that into your book. You have to give them a why.
Yeah, absolutely. And who are you writing it for? Mm. But, you know, it's interesting, the audience piece. Like there's a lot of talk about, you know, creating your client avatar or whatever, which is basically writing in detail who that audience is, where they live, what they eat, what's their family situation, their job, their occupation, all of those kinds of things. So really get quite granular around who it is you're writing for. But then let that go, because most writers, every book I've written for myself first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that might sound selfish, but if you're not writing it for yourself, then, and you're writing something to please or appease or market to somebody, but you're not writing it for yourself first, then it's going to be, people are going to read through that. They're going to see through it when they read it. So my personal philosophy is you write a book for your own purpose first.
Yeah, and put yourself in it. You have to be willing to unmask a little bit, don't you, and share.
Yeah, people love the stories most. They love your vulnerability. They love your experiences of where things went belly up, as well as, you know, positive, the good and the bad and the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
I think people want to know who you are as a person. They're buying your essence when they buy your book. They're buying a bit of you and a bit of your life, whether you like it or not. They are buying a bit of you in every successful business book. I just read a book called Launch by Jeff Walker, which I've been following his methodology as part of launching the Purpose Project online course.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have kept reading that book unless he'd talked about his failures,
yes,
very personal failures, alongside his personal successes, because it just makes it much more believable.
Mm-hmm.
And also it gives you a sense of compassion and care for the person. So I think people have to like their authors, the people that they're reading, to a degree.
And he's a great example. He is just so likable, isn't he? And you see his videos and be, oh, look, I really like this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And look, and that's the other thing, or being authentic. I think even if people don't like you, that's better than nobody liking you and not paying attention. You know, I think there's that adage that, you know, 33% of the world will love you, 33% will hate you, and the other 33% don't give a toss or don't care.
Yes.
And I think that's the other thing, is we want to just, like, not care that people won't like you. I know that people don't like me. You know, some people don't like what I have to say, or they don't agree with it, or they think that I'm, you know, my message doesn't resonate. Well, that is going to be the way of the world, and we just have to accept that. And, in fact, the more people that don't like you, probably almost the better the impact you're going to have.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess it also means the more people who don't like you, there's equal chance that there's more people who do like you, because you're much more visible.
Yeah, exactly.
Your message is spreading far and wide. So I might just close with a final question, because I'm quite intrigued by this. And in the publishing world, self-publishing nonfiction, there's obviously a very strong correlation between business owners publishing to raise the visibility, hopefully attract more opportunities to their business. But I feel like there's also an opportunity for women who are in careers working for other companies to do the same thing, to publish their expertise, publish around their purpose, take their purpose and their expertise, put it together in a book with their name on it, which then would sit on their CV, sit on their LinkedIn platform, show that, really kind of show their knowledge which will therefore lead to opportunities within organisations. Now, do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I just think anyone who has the will and the, knows the why to write a book, it has nothing to do with where you work or what your job is, whether you're a mother, whether you work in a big corporate. Like, just do it. And, you know, in a big corporate, you have an immediate audience. You know, you have your peers. Very often you'll have even resources at hand to help you get the book out into the marketplace, or particularly if it's aligned to a message that the company wants to support. So there's great opportunity for thought leadership and publishing within the business space. And so I'd encourage people to start there for sure.
Yeah, that's great. So, look, thanks very much for coming on the call today, Carolyn. It's been an absolute pleasure. Where can people find you online?
So just carolyntate.co, Carolyn, CarolynTate.co. And, yeah, if I can be of help, just reach out, and the online course is available and you can buy any of my books on that website. So, if you've got a book in you, I 100% imagine I can 100% encourage you to do it and make it a practice. Just develop a writing methodology and modality that will suit you, suit your life and your work life and your lifestyle.
And I'd suggest to people listening that if you want to follow Carolyn, you'll see how this works. It's always good to see somebody who's publishing and putting all the pieces together. You know, how do they put their website together? How do they use podcast programs, whatever? How do they do their newsletter? How do they promote themselves as speakers? So Carolyn's just a great example to follow and to see how she's doing all of those things. So her website, I guess, is a really good base to go to plug into following her in all sorts of places online. So thank you again, Carolyn. And I'm Bev Ryan. You can find me at smartwomenpublish.com.